You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, you're listening to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast, and I am Mike, and thank you so much for listening. This week we are doing a music spotlight, and yes, folks, we are finally looking at Queen, and man, there are so many memories, so many songs, so many things to go with it, so many parts of your life that was hit by Queen, and I think it's going to be a blast to talk all about it. Freddie Mercury and his crew were just everywhere from the mid to early 70s on through the mid 80s. Queen was, you know, a staple in a lot of people's minds. And, you know, it's just, it's awesome. And until the sad passing of Freddie Mercury, you know, Queen was just, you know, one of the top bands of that era. And, you know, I know this man is a huge, huge fan of Queen and should be a lot of, you know, memories from him. Let's talk about Mr. Mike Gordon, of course.
Savior of the universe. Howdy.
You ready for Queen?
I am. I am very much ready for Queen. I've always been, well, yeah, I think I was always ready for Queen, even before I knew who Queen was. And so, yeah, when it was my turn to choose our artist spotlight out of the crew, it was easy for me. This was a no-brainer. You know, we're going to try to do them justice in terms of talk about them, what we can, our favorite moments and songs and stuff like that. But, I mean, obviously a band this huge, you know, we're not going to be able to cover everything, but it's going to be fun to talk about. And, you know, we've got a good crew to do that. So I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. It should be very interesting to see, you know, other people's points of view, where they had it in their lives. And, you know, what meanings it has. And just please don't bring up Bohemian Rhapsody. That's all I ask.
Oh, I think it's going to come up, Mike.
Oh, I know it is. I know it is. But definitely, you know, we want to hear from you guys. Let's take a moment to, you know, say thank you to everybody who has been donating to our Patreon. That's right, folks. We have some great things going up there. Last week we had the Westworld panel from Dragon Con 2017. This week we will have another panel. And also I know Kevin and Cornflake from the Flopcast have a brand new episode going up direct for Patreons. That's actually already up by the time the show goes live. So, you know, I think it's pretty awesome that we're getting, you know, original material from our different shows, but we're also getting stuff from different cons we go to and such. And we'll be recording a lot of this year's Dragon Con to be on Patreon over the, you know, next coming year. I think it's pretty awesome. You know, I know I'm doing at least 11 panels and maybe even more stuff we'll be recording. So, you know, be prepared. You know, you're going to be getting a lot of stuff. And yes, you can help us out. And you could be part of our Patreon for just 25 cents a week. That's not that bad. You know, for as little as 25 cents a week, you can help support the ESO Network. And, you know, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/ESO Network. Doesn't get much easier than that. Or if you want, go to ESOnetwork.com. And right on the top navigation, there's also a link for the Patreon. We also have a link there for our Amazon store with back to school. You know, here is Amazon. I know everybody and their brother who has a podcast has an Amazon store now. And, you know, everyone says, oh, you could help us out. And, you know, we appreciate it. And I'm sure they do. And we would appreciate it also. That's just the type of thing it is. It doesn't take, you know, cost you anything extra. Sometimes you get even more discounts if you have Amazon Prime. And just go in there and do our link and shop to your heart's delight. You know, people are already buying stuff for Labor Day, which is here in the States, is next week. And then, you know, or even further out, you know, you have the Jewish holidays coming up. You have Halloween not too far away. And I know everyone is going to want pumpkin spice. You know, everything's going to be pumpkin spice in the next week or two, you know, all the way through Thanksgiving. And then it all turns peppermint. what can you say? But, you know, with Amazon, it's just really cool that you can, you know, shop to your heart's delight and get really neat things, including Infinity Wars. It's now out on DVD, Blu-ray, and 4K, and or you could even stream it. And, you know, it's pretty darn amazing. This, we just talked about it a few weeks ago, it feels like, and it's already out on disc. That's pretty amazing how quick it's going to happen. And I know this week is Deadpool 2 is coming out already. So they're releasing them fast and furious. And I know they're doing orders already for Solo and a few other of the summer movies that we've watched already and reviewed. So should be kind of interesting to see. And of course, we have the T Public store where you can buy all kinds of really neat ESO Network swag. And then, you know, give a little, you know, love to the ESO Network by wearing us on your chest. And like Mike said, if anyone comes to his table at Dragon Con, they get a special, you know, little gift if you're wearing an ESO Network shirt. Right, Mike?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So definitely, you know, what's your table number again?
831.
That's right. Artist Alley in the America's Mart. Very cool stuff. And of course, as we always like to say, we'd like to hear from you guys. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. Doesn't get much easier than that. All right, that's it. No more hacking, no more talking about stuff like that. Let's get started with the show. It is about time. All right, Mr. Mike, rants and raves time. What do you got for us?
Well, before we start talking about the group queen, I do want to pay a little bit of respect real quick to a queen that we lost this week, Aretha Franklin. And I mean, she was the queen of soul. She was the first lady inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So I do want to just, you know, pay her respect because, you know, that was all she was all about, respect, R-E-S-P-E-C-T, right? So I want to pay our respect to the queen of soul, the queen of rock and roll, really, I guess you could call her. But also it kind of made me think, too, and, you know, we were thinking about Queen, that and also I want to harken back to a segment that that our good friends over at the Flopcast did about talking about Hall of Fame bands that they've seen, Hall of Fame artists. And look, there's over 323 artists in the Hall of Fame, in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And certainly we're not going to go through every single one of them. And I'm not going to put you on the spot, Mike. I can tell you, though, that I have seen about 22 of them, and I feel very fortunate to have done so. But I'm curious, two questions for you, sir. Is there a band or an artist that is no longer around, either they're passed away or the band's broken up or what have you, or it was just a fabulous tour that you wish you'd seen? Is there some regret that you have of a band or an artist that you wish at some point that you'd seen? I know for me, there's quite a few. Obviously, you know, Queen would have been amazing to see with Freddie. I wish I'd got to experience that as well. And we'll talk about someone. We'll talk to someone who has seen them a little bit later in the show. But I also want to, like, in my hand, I had tickets to see Aerosmith and Guns N' Roses at a time when both of them were so hot. It was the late 80s. Yeah, it was the late 80s. I don't think it was 90s yet. It was the late 80s. And both of the bands were at the peak. This was before Guns N' Roses started acting all like, oh, we might show up and we might not. They were like opening for Aerosmith. So they had to go on first, and Aerosmith played. And it was in Boston. So it's in Aerosmith. Well, it was in Boston proper. It was actually at an outdoor venue called Great Woods, which is in Massachusetts. But it might as well be, that's Aerosmith country, right? So I'm like, I had tickets, but I had to go on a vacation with some buddies at Nantucket, and I didn't want to get out of it because it was a cool thing to do, but unfortunately I couldn't do both, so I opted for the vacation weekend, and man, I've heard nothing but people who were at that show were like, it was amazing, it was them at their peak, both bands. And I just sort of like wish like I could have been at two places at once.
Oh, of course.
Like that was like really, like that one really stung. I was like, oh, I hate to get rid of these tickets. I was able to sell them to somebody. I didn't get a lot of, you know, I didn't mark up the rates that much. I think I just sold them at cost, really, because at that point I just needed to get my money back. But Yeah, I had good tickets too. They were low down. They weren't like first row or anything, but they were pretty low down. And I just kind of, regret that I didn't. I mean, I liked it. Like I said, I'm glad I went on the vacation and the weekend or whatever. But looking back on it now, I'm like, man, I really wish I could have been in two places.
Oh, sure.
Is there like been a concert for you for that?
Oh God, should we start? plenty of concerts that, you know, over the years I wish I would have gone to, and Queen was one of them. Especially, you know, when you find out that the, you know, Freddie had passed away, and because at the time, you know, Queen was amazing. There was, you know, everybody knows who knows me, or I've heard me talk in the past. I go see a lot of live music.
Absolutely.
I love live music. There's nothing like going to see a live concert, the energy, the feel, the look, the smells even. You know, there's always been live music. There's artists I wish I would have gone to see. I've always been a huge Beatles fan. And, you know, I've seen George Harrison. I've seen Paul McCartney. I've seen Ringo. You know, not playing together, of course, but I've seen them separately. I wish I would have seen John Lennon in concert. I would have been done anything to see John Lennon. Up until recently, I thought I was never going to be able to see Electric Light Orchestra with Jeff Lynne. But, you know, he announced, 2 years ago that he was going to be touring, you know, with a new band, you know, as Jeff Lynne's Electric Light Orchestra. And, you know, he was only doing 2 shows in the United States at the time. And we were lucky enough to, you know, take Judy to go see ELO at the Hollywood Bowl. And, you know, it was actually cheaper for us to go to California than it was to go to New York. Surprisingly.
Yeah, I believe
it. So, you know, ideas like that. Bands like that, you know, ELO, I would have loved to seen Harry Chapin in concert. And we actually had tickets to go see Harry Chapin when he was going to be coming to Meriwether Post Pavilion. But he actually passed away in a car accident a month before, and they had to cancel the concert, obviously.
Wow. That's close, man.
Yeah. And so, you know, I would have been amazed to, you know, see him. And he would have survived that car accident if he was wearing his frippin' seatbelt. And it was just, you know, he wasn't wearing a seatbelt and he was in the accident. So, you know, stuff like that. You know, concerts, you know, there's other, you know, people I would have loved to have seen, you know, but bands break up or, you know, seeing stuff like that, I would have loved to actually seen Nirvana in concert.
Mm, yeah.
You know, to actually go to one of their shows.
Wait. You lived in Seattle.
I did. And we actually...
Like during that whole like grunge time.
Yes, I did. And I've seen Pearl Jam. I've seen Alice in Chains. I've seen Soundgarden. I've seen, you know, all these different bands, you know, from that era live.
You just missed that one.
Well, they were Nirvana was the first one to break out.
That's true. They were.
And, you know, by the time I was in Seattle, they were already playing the more expensive places. And I was,
gotcha.
I was a poor unemployed person. And, you know, I was able to spend $10 to go to the warehouse shows and see these bands I mentioned, you know, down south of, you know, where the Kingdome was. And, you know, being able to go to that kind of stuff. And, you know, before they were really big. And, you know, stuff like that was great. And, but then, you know, to see Nirvana, you know, because Nirvana was the big thing. And they were already doing tours, you know, like festivals and tours and, you know, stuff like that. And it was just like, you know, I heard about them and, you know, I've, you know, there's like things like that I've always wanted to go see. And this one's going to be funny though, because there's a band out there. I don't know if you've heard of them. They're called the Presidents of the United States of America.
Yep.
I am cursed never to see this band. it was always, I had tickets to go see them and I got sick, or I went, they were playing the after concert at the Seattle Mariners game. My mom was ill and I had to, you know, go home. So I couldn't stay for the whole baseball game to see them, or, you know, items like that. I just miss them, or I was out of town when they were coming into town type thing. And over the years, I've just always missed them. And that's just one of those bands I've always wanted to go see because I've always been a big fan of their music. And it's just like, ah, you know, type thing.
Wow. I think I've covered this, especially when we did our Prince episode after he passed away. But obviously the last performance that he did in Atlanta, I kind of kicked myself that I wasn't there. I mean, I was fortunate enough to see him four times. So, I mean, that's amazing that I was able to do that. And this past year I was able to see the Revolution, which was awesome. But I will tell you that, you know, during the Purple Rain tour, I waited overnight in line to get tickets and I came up empty, and I wish that had not been the case. That would have been. So those two Prince shows are ones that, I really wish that I had gotten a chance to see. I mean, like I said, I feel blessed that I was able to see him as many times as I was, but those two times in particular, that, cause that hurt, man. Waiting over. Spending all night waiting for tickets and not being able to get any because they just went so fast was really painful. Obviously there's a lot of other acts that have, as you said, for one reason or another, aren't around anymore. I do remember in I think it was in junior high school or high school, I remember all these kids going to all these upperclassmen and friends of mine going to see Kiss. And they were talking about how it was amazing that because they had a tank on stage. And I just thought, oh my God, I would love to see something visual like that. And I saw Kiss much, much, much later. And there was no tank. there was just, you know, them on wheelchairs. No, just kidding. So I kind of wish that, oh man, I wish I'd experienced that, like Kiss in their heyday, or, seeing early shows like that. So that's one part of the question. The other part of the question is, that I'm going to ask you is, there's still lots of great bands out there, lots of great musicians out there. Who is on your list that you haven't seen yet that is like, if they're coming, boom, it's an automatic, like, it's almost like a done deal. Like, I don't care how much it costs. If they're coming, I'm going. Like, that you haven't seen yet. Do you have a top of yours?
You know, this, we do it, you know, especially now what we call our bucket list.
I know, that's people, why I'm asking.
You know, because, you know, if somebody is coming and they're older, I'll go see them. You know, that's why we went to go see the Chieftains when they came to town on their farewell tour. Or we went to go see The Who on one of their many farewell tours. Or, you know, stuff like that.
Fooled again. Won't get fooled again, well, right?
Exactly. It is The Who. That's their thing, you know. And, you know, there are plenty of people. If I heard they were coming, you know, I would... If Led Zeppelin...
Is there anybody, like... Yeah, I was going to say, is there anybody who's escaped you? Yeah, Led Zeppelin's talking about it, right?
If Led Zeppelin did their tour, I would be there. You know, they wouldn't sound anything like they did years ago, but I would say I'd do it to say I saw Led Zeppelin, you know, type thing. You know, I took Judy recently... not that long ago, to see The Dead and Company, because it's the closest thing to seeing a Grateful Dead show, and she had never been. And so that was something to take off her bucket list.
Now, you guys are going to see Fleetwood Mac pretty soon.
Yes.
Obviously, but have you seen them before?
This will be my fourth time.
Okay, gotcha.
I was actually at Fleetwood Mac when they did their reunion concert, which they taped in Los Angeles, for the HBO special that they did, the live CD and everything. Mm-hmm. I was at that show when the USC marching band came out through the crowd and playing Tusk and everything. And it was just like awesome. Because I'm torn about seeing Fleetwood back this time because, you know, now that Lindsey Buckingham isn't with them anymore.
Right.
And, you know, I love, you know, I think it's Neil Flynn from Crowded House.
Crowded House, yeah.
And Split Enz. I'm a huge, huge Split Enz fan.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see that dynamic. I'm kind of curious. We saw their last, I think, what will be Fleetwood Mac's last tour together. Like, Michelle and I went and saw them finally a couple years ago when they came around. And I'm glad we did because that's probably the last time those members are going to be touring or doing anything together. Because it was Stevie and Christy and John and Mick and Lindsay. And
I know John is sick, so.
Yeah. So that was incredible. But I must say, I told Michelle, I said, we can't afford it this time, but I'm like, I am curious as to how that's going to sound. Cause I bet it's going to sound cool. And Lindsay's coming on his own. And I'm like, wow, to hear Lindsey Buckingham play things like Go Insane and Trouble and Holiday Road, like I'm like, that would be pretty cool, like to see like a Lindsey Buckingham show.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to think of who's the top of my list and who's somebody that I would jump at and pay for, like no matter what, like I would be there. The only band that I could
I do have one. But okay. Tell me who you're thinking of first, and I'll tell you mine.
Well, the only band that I could think of, and this is really unlikely because they've been broken up for years, although they are just like the last month or so, we've started to get rumblings that they're recording together. And so if they decide to do one last tour, I will pay whatever it takes to see them, and that is the Kinks.
Really?
I've always wanted to see the Kinks. I've seen Dave Ray Davies separately a few times. I've seen them both separately, but I've never seen the Kinks together. And to see them together, if they were just doing one, like I don't think it'll happen. It probably won't happen. But if it does happen, I will be there.
That's awesome, man. That is awesome. Yeah,
and that's really like I'm sure there may be some others, but I'm hard pressed to think of somebody else that I'm like, I would be like, oh yeah, I'm whatever, however much it costs.
I got one right here, right now. If Danny Elfman ever decides to start touring again with Oingo Boingo.
Oh, that's even less likely than the Kinks.
Yes, I know.
Those are brothers that don't get along either.
No, they don't. But Danny's been playing, you know, different gigs every once in a while.
Sure.
And, you know, he's really close with, you know, a couple members of the band still. They still actually work with him on the soundtracks.
Yeah. And you never know. Like, you know, the money could be there. They could just, like, have a good, like, they'd be like, you know, let's get together. Like Guns N' Roses recently did. Yeah. You know, they don't get along, but what the heck? It's like for a few months, just get the money and get out, right?
Heck, I would even travel to go see that. If they said Oingo Boingo is playing two shows at the Hollywood Bowl, I would be there to see that. Because, you know, I went to one of their last tours back in the 89-90 era, and it was their last tour, and I had front row seats for that at Painter's Mill in Baltimore, Maryland. And it was one of the most amazing shows I had ever been to.
Excellent.
And, you know, I loved every second of it. And, you know, Danny Elfman puts on one of the most amazing shows ever. And, you know, hey, how many rock concerts do you go see that has a xylophone, you know? So Oingo Boingo would definitely be, that is my ultimate bucket list, probably. And, you know, there's people who passed away, like we had mentioned earlier, that, you know, wish I could have seen again and, you know, had an amazing time. But I'm pretty amazed to see, you know, and hopefully someday I'll get to see some of these other concerts that I've wanted to do. I've always wanted to take Judy C. Dave Matthews. I've wanted to go, you know, take her see Fish, you know, stuff like that. Bands that are touring all the time, but just scheduling a lot of time also is a big, you know, thing in the way, gets in the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I love going to see live music. We probably go see 20 shows a year at least.
Yeah, you do. That's a low ballpark for you.
Yeah, it is. And that doesn't and that doesn't even include music festivals. And, you know, we don't even do those as much as we used to, but hopefully in the next year we'll start picking that up again. And, you know, I don't want to go something like Bonnaroo or stuff like that. I would love to.
We're getting too old for that.
No, not even getting too old. I don't want to be out in the heat and humidity, you know, and everything. Because when I go to like the Floyd Fest or Lock-In or some of the other festivals that we've gone to in the past, it's in the mountains and it's great because you don't have a lot of the, you know, you sometimes have, you know, pretty hot, but, you know, you deal with it. I've just heard horror stories about Bonnaroo, and it's just like, yeah, no, I'll pass on that one. I would love to, as a, you know, something on my bucket list, if you want to know, I would love to go to Burning Man sometime.
Cool.
I think that would be kind of cool. You know, I don't know how much Judy would be out to being in the desert, but, you know, but I think it would be an interesting thing to try.
Sure.
You know, so, and my sister goes to like New Orleans Jazz Festival every year. Wouldn't mind going to South by Southwest. It's supposed to be an amazing festival down in Austin. And I've never even been to Austin, so.
Nor have I, but I've heard good things about it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so, I do enjoy their City Limits program.
Oh, so do I. I would love to go to a taping of that.
Yes, that would be cool.
That would be awesome. That's what we should do for your birthday, Mikey. Southwest flies really cheap to Austin from Atlanta. We can go to a tape. We should do a taping of it.
Just as long as it's not Spirit.
Oh, no, never. Uh-uh. Never, ever, ever bring that S word into the show. There's other S words I'd let in the show, but Spirit isn't one of them.
Very nice.
But yeah, so there's tons of things. That would actually be a really fun thing to do, is to go to see. You know what? I'm going to research that for us. That is awesome, man. I think that was a great topic for tonight. Thank you guys for listening to our musical fantasies.
Yeah, right.
We want to hear about your musical fantasies at home. Please write us, EarthStation1.
Be careful. At
ESONetwork.com. Yeah, I know. I could get into a lot of trouble with that. But, you know, I'll have fun reading them anyway. So please write us. We definitely want to hear from you. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with the Geek Seat.
Hi, this is Ashley Pauls with this week's Box Office Buzz. I don't know about you guys, but I am starting to get super pumped about Dragon Con. It's only about a week away, as hard as that is to believe. There's going to be a lot of great film, authors, TV guests coming to this con. But before we start getting ready for that, we do have a couple new movies to chat about that are coming to theaters this week. One of these that I am actually really interested in is called The Happy Time Murders. It's a gritty, raunchy puppet movie. Yes, you heard that right. Its tagline is No Sesame, All Street, which I think is absolutely hilarious. It's probably my favorite tagline for a movie this year. It's a detective drama about the murders of the former cast of a classic puppet TV show. The trailers just look really over the top and funny. I think it's a really creative concept. I don't know if I'll be able to get a chance to see it in theaters just because the summer is winding down and getting kind of crazy, but it looks really funny, and I will definitely be planning to catch this one on DVD at the very least. We also have a family film called Axel, the letters AXL, and I haven't heard anything about this, but it's about a robot dog used by the military to protect troops. And this robot dog ends up escaping and befriending a boy. Like I said, I haven't really heard anything at all about this. Don't really think it'll make much of a splash, but you can never tell. And finally, new on DVD and Blu-ray this week, we have Deadpool 2. It's kind of fun. A lot of the big movies earlier this summer are starting to hit home video, so it's a good chance to watch them again. Or if you happen to miss them, a good chance to see it for the first time. I really like Deadpool 2, and I actually enjoyed it even more than the first movie. I thought it was funny. I appreciated that they kind of got away from the whole origin story thing. And I really enjoyed it. Only got to see it once in theaters, so I'm looking forward to watching it again at home. And that's it for this week. If you're looking for more entertainment-related content, be sure to check out my blog, boxofficebuzzab.wordpress.com.
Okay, let's talk about the Flopcast.
Where every week we drink a lot of coffee and we talk about comic books,
movies,
conventions,
music,
Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh, don't forget the coffee.
Lots of weird, obscure pop culture stuff from the 70s and 80s.
And chickens. Yeah, chickens.
This will be the stupidest half hour of your week.
We guarantee it.
You can find us on the ESO Network.
And Flopcast.net. I was struck by lightning, walking down the street.
I was hit by something last night in my sleep. Hey everyone, welcome back to Earth Station 1. Now it's time for the Geek Seek segment, and our guest slash victim this week is author Mark Anthony Tirino. Welcome.
Glad to be here.
Welcome to the station. Yes, welcome. That will come in a little bit. We'll ease you into it. Okay. Welcome to the station, sir. For those people who may not be familiar with your work, tell us a little bit about yourself.
As you said, my full name is Mark Anthony Eterno. I've written a 13-book fantasy slash sci-fi epic by the name of Maldine. And aside from that, I got a master's in physics. I ghostwrite. I've written of my own stuff, Maldine, and about 20 other books. So that's all I do is write.
That's a 13-book series. Is that now? Is that concluded? It was always meant to be 13, or is that ongoing?
I finished that as well as a 2-book. Prequel after a friend pointed out after reading through the whole mess a few times that I had enough material for a prequel. And then I got bored and wrote another 5-book series about something else, and then the occasional what I call a short story or short novel on some other stuff. And by short, I'm talking 100,000 words.
That's pretty significant. Tell us a little bit about the Maldine, though. What is it about? It's a would you call it a magic adventure story?
Well, Maldine is the name of the planet, and the whole plot revolves around that. It starts out initially sounding and looking like a standard fantasy, like swords and sorcery. In fact, a blogger reviewer had read the first book and compared it to Lord of the Rings meets the Odyssey, which, if I'm going to be compared to two books, they're two best books to be compared to.
And authors like Tolkien and Homer. Gee, thanks.
Yeah. And after a while, though, in the series, you know, starting with about the second book, you actually begin to see the sci-fi elements creep in until it eventually gets to the point where it was Arthur C. Clarke that said any technology advanced enough, et cetera. It sort of goes along those lines. I like mixing genres. And so I do it here. And the story itself, like I said, it revolves around the world of Maldine and what I call my ultimate bad guy, a guy by the name of Myro. And all our intrepid heroes, their job is to find out what the heck he wants, how to stop him. And, well, the ultimate hero, I'll just say, has to have the ultimate prize, the ultimate goal. And that's another big part of the plot that they're trying to figure out.
Very cool. I think also I saw, if I'm not mistaken, in addition to writing, you also do you have seminars? Do you teach writing? It seems like I've seen that you have sort of like how like tips and secrets. You offer that.
Oh yeah, I posted a few of those on my website because I had a website, got to do something there, and I realized after it was on. A couple LinkedIn segments. Well, I initially joined LinkedIn like 8 years ago to pick up some tips. Turns out I was the one giving the tips, so why not write them down? But for my day job, I also write. I ghostwrite, and I ghostwrite fiction and nonfiction. You know, basically to keep the money coming in until I can get my books moving. So that's what I do 24/7. And like I said, I have a few of my tips posted on my website, because it turns out I was doing stuff that other people hadn't figured out.
Is there any either mistake or like an easy tip that you can, that you see that a lot of certainly first time writers could find extremely useful or maybe guilty of?
There's a couple. One, keep the grammar checker turned off. That's great for like book reports and business reports, but nobody talks like they're straight out of Yale or something. So, and also the way I describe things, I tend to get a bit sort of quasi-poetic in there. And again, the grammar checker is going to buzz all the time on that. So you have to write the way people talk. And if you have any doubts, just talk with yourself out loud if you have to. See if it sounds right, and then translate that into words. And sometimes I will purposely misspell a word just because that's the way the accent sounds.
Yeah, that sounds fair. I know that that's a tip that I learned very early on, where it's a good idea always to read back what you've written. And if you're having trouble reading it out loud, that means that there's something wrong with something.
Yeah, and especially in some books where the guy comes up with his alien name that's like 90% consonants.
Right.
Like any given Lovecraft book, and you're sort of going, you know, what tongue-twisting thing do you have to try and pronounce this darn thing? And it was a bit of that. And there's one short story I wrote. One of the characters actually had a severe lisp. So after I wrote out all his dialogue, I replaced all his S's with SH's. And my spell checker was acting like a pachinko machine by the time I was finished, but the effect was there. It worked.
Well, you can play around with some of that too. I mean, when I was looking at some of the sample stuff I got from your website, what is it? It's not a character. Is it a place? Is it Tel Del Nosho? Is that correct? And am I pronouncing that right?
Oh, almost. Tel Del Nosho.
Tel Del Nosho.
Yeah. Did I mention I invented my own language? that's part of the, I had to have some background details, and that's the name of the Great Whirlpool, and that's another part of the plot. It's a whirlpool about 1,500 miles across, and it's been going on as far as people know history. And the literal translation of Tel Del Nosho means really big hole in the water.
That's awesome. And it's just one of those words I looked at and I'm like, he's having a little fun there. And sometimes coming up with those words is pretty fun.
Yeah, like I said, I think my Maldine dictionary is like up to about 300 words, and I have the alphabet to go along with it and a font file if anybody wants to get really geeky and have this squirrely alien text on their machine.
So when did you – I'm sorry, Ian, like I'm just getting over the like 13 volumes or whatever. It's like when did you start? When was the first Maldine chapter or book? Was that released?
Well, the actual writing of it, not counting the prep work, I started writing in 1996. And the last book 13, I finished 2003, taking most summers off. I should mention these are not short books. The average length is about 375,000 words. And in fact, book 13 actually comes within a hair's breadth of War and Peace. So we're talking a 5.2 million word series that I did in about 8 years. That's the actual writing end of it. Prep work, I had the story and the details I was working on off and on for about 15 years.
That's impressive. That's impressive. Now, I see that they're released now. Do you combine them into like the volumes? Or is that a combination of them? Or is the volumes like half of the first volume, like the first novel?
I'm glad you asked that, because the first novel originally I was trying to do, you know, something kind of traditional, and ended up getting hooked up with, and fortunately they're out of business, they're called Publish America, And that's another horror story. They got sued. And they said, hey, we can't do an 800-page paperback. We have to divide this up. So it became Volume 1 and 2, and it was written as one single book. When I got on my own and did an e-book, it was already formatted that way. So I said, okay, two volumes, that'll be a hard sell. And then after a while, I began to realize, wait a minute, it's e-book. I don't have any freaking production costs. You know, there's no print material. So the first book is out as Volume 1 and 2. The second full book, then I just said heck with it and released the whole thing as one single book, even though it's slightly – the first one's, I think, 330,000 words. The second one's 375. So that's why I have the Volume 1 and 2 of the first book. But after that, I figured this is e-book. Each novel will get released as I intended, and then if I pick up a regular traditional publisher, I'll let him worry about the details.
Yeah, yeah. They're really affordable, too. So you kept the prices down, and yeah. They're really easy to grab. So definitely recommend it. We will definitely have links to your website as well as where people can go to get those books. So, well, very cool. Well, it's time. I think, Mike, he's ready. I think he's warmed up now. I think he's ready to be strapped into the seat.
Yep.
Are you sure it's nice and tight?
Yep. Yeah.
You know, he is from the West Coast, and he is a fantasy person.
Yeah, that's true.
So you got to kind of worry about that.
Yeah, yeah. I see what you're saying. But, yeah, I think he's good to go.
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah.
All right, sir. Are you ready for your first question in the geek seat?
Launch away.
All right, Mark. Your first question is, what is your favorite geek out moment?
That one's easy. I was at a small convention. This was like, about 88. L.A. area Pasadena Convention Center. And one of the guests, and there was about 30 or 40 of us stuffed in this really tiny classroom-sized room, was Gene Roddenberry.
Wow.
And wow.
He was dressed there in a Hawaiian shirt and acting all casual. The other two major guests were like, at the main event was Ray Bradbury and the guy from Nightline. They were all in shirt and tie, and he's in a little Hawaiian shirt. So we got a more personal segment with him for about an hour, listening to him talk about different behind the scenes stories and stuff, and then everybody tagging along with him to the big room, and like me, just I want to say something. What the heck do I say? You know, it's like I was within about like 10 feet of the man. So that was my favorite.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. That's being in the room with greatness.
Yeah.
I would not be saying no to that one. What was your most disappointing geek out moment, though?
That was another convention a few years later. It was even tinier than this one. It was called Bill and Ted's Excellent Convention. And the main guest of honor was Adam West. I grew up, you know, with him as my hero, Batman, and everything else. And the time came, everybody at the convention waiting outside the main room for Adam West to appear, and he's late. And finally, one of the convention guys came out and said, sorry, he's not leaving his hotel room. We paid him everything. He said he doesn't do conventions or events this small. And everybody was really disappointed. You know, it's like we were there. We're a small outfit, but you're a hero, and he wouldn't come out. He never left his hotel room. So that's what it kept with me, even up when several years later, I think Family Guy, and he was one of the voices on it. I couldn't watch Family Guy. Well, aside from the fact I didn't like Family Guy, but one of the reasons was I Adam West's voice, and I kept harking back to that same convention. It's like, you disappointed my little child.
Wow, that does suck. I had never heard that.
Yeah.
Wow. And that sucks for the people who came purposely to see him, or for the convention promoters who were planning on him being there to greet everybody.
Yeah.
Wow. What geeks you out the most?
There's a few things. I mean, one, the right movie. Two, basically doing what I do, which is writing. I mean, if I'm writing a good scene for one of my own books, I mean, there will be smoke coming from the keyboard and out my ears. There'll be sweat pouring down my face. You know, the whole emotional thing. And also likewise on certain movies, and they're becoming fewer and far between lately. Like back when the original Star Wars came out, for instance, I was one of those kids that saw it, and that was a good geeko movie. Seeing a movie like that, having a moment like that where your blood's pumping and you just can't wait for it to continue. And I try to write that way too. So
I totally understand that. Yeah. I could totally see that. Star Wars did that to a lot of people, actually.
Yeah, it changed everything.
What turns your geek off?
There's a few people you see at the conventions, and if you've seen Galaxy Quest and the convention scene, you'll know the types I'm talking about, where they're taking a little bit too far and thinking like, hey, some of this stuff is real. Like there really is an enterprise out there and things like that, and the way they're talking about it. And you just want to smile politely, back up a step, and go, yeah, thank you. I got something else to attend. Bye. You know, they get a little bit, you know, too much off the deep end.
Well, conventions kind of do that to people, though.
Yeah. After taking that into account, I've still seen a couple people like that where I'm going, okay, where's the next con party?
We're about to go to one of those cons in a week and a half. I do understand. Oh, yeah. What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
I'm not really sure of that. There's been so many I've read. I mean, I have shelves and shelves of old books I've read over the years. And then, of course, there's a few characters of my own that I've made. I'm not sure I could really narrow that down, except maybe to there's like the old stage type character there on the top of the hill or hidden a mountainside or wherever that you'll see in a few types of books. And maybe meeting one of those so I could go, okay, the book says you have the answers. I have a few questions, you know, about my life that I wouldn't mind being answered. So for that reason, one of those types of characters.
That is awesome. That's a great answer, actually. What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
Any given bad guy, including my own. I mean, well, think about it. Meeting Darth Vader, he's great to read about, great to see on the screen, but you're there in person, and you're 1/4 chokehold away from just buying the farm. And I got a few villains that are actually worse than that. It's like, no, I wouldn't want to meet my own villains because they're really bad. You know, so there's some things that should just remain in the printed page and not be met in person.
Mm-hmm. I could see that. I definitely could see that. And, you know, I think that's, you know, a great way to put it, too. But what is your favorite geek word, phrase, or quote?
Well, for this one, I may have to fall back on the old standby because it's the one geek phrase or quote that there's another one that is considered geeky. I was about to say "May the Force be with you," but there's another one that is kind of geeky, but not from a sci-fi thing. It was said by Einstein. And he said, imagination is more important than knowledge. And I have a shirt that has that actually printed on the bottom.
That's awesome. That's words to live by if you're a geek. What is your ideal geek occupation?
I'm doing it. Basically writing. Specifically, I like to write more of my books. But, you know, that's my ideal occupation, you know, the thing I've basically been setting up my entire life for. So, you know, this is it. Now, I'm living the dream. I just got to figure out a way of basically making money off of it and getting people to know about me and what I've done.
That's one of the hardest things to do is promotion.
Yeah.
For a lot of us, including us here on the podcast. So we do understand that. What geek occupation would you not like to do?
Well, I can't paint a straight line if my life depended on it. So I would stay away from basically being an artist. I mean, I'm an artist of the written word, not of the painted word. I know people that do that, and for them that's great. But for me, it'd be like trying to pull imaginary teeth or something. I couldn't do that. I love watching other people do it, but
No, totally understand that. Some people just have the artistic gene. Other people write. So I do understand that completely.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's hard to actually see a good, you know, artist who's a great writer. So, you know, either that or they're bipolar. So it's okay.
Yeah.
All right, sir. You ready for your final question in the geek seat?
Yep.
All right, Mark. What is your ultimate geek fantasy?
To be talking about my book in front of a bunch of people at a convention and finding out that people actually love it. You know, that would be the fantasy, I guess, of any given author. And as scared to death as I am of being in front of crowds and I stutter and everything else, I would just love to see people, you know, there going, hey, we love your book, and just talking over one scene or another, including maybe something I thought was some obscure scene that everyone missed, because that's actually happened with a couple of people. And, you know, just seeing the final fruits of my labor before going back and laboring some more.
No, totally understand that. That's everyone's dream, yeah, is to be successful at what they do. Especially if it's something that you love.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, I've got some great news for you, my friend.
Yes.
You have made it through the Geek Seat. Congratulations. Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young man what he's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $38.04.
Yay! And there was much rejoicing.
We are,
see if anybody finds a quote.
We are glad to have you join us. Yeah, we believe me. There's going to be a lot of listeners to get that quote. we run some pretty big geek circles here, so on the station. So yes, and I am glad to mention your Maldine series. Now, people should know that if they're searching for this online, we'll have a show link to it in the show notes. But it is spelled M-A-L-D as in David, E-N-E, Maldine. And if you just go to maldine.com, you can find out all about it. Is there any other place they should go to find you online, Mark?
I have a Facebook fan page, but you can find that again on maldine.com. I have everything linked through there.
Excellent, excellent. Look at you, consolidating, making things simple.
I try.
That's awesome, though. It's very good. And I'm glad to have you on the station with us, man.
It was a fun time being here.
Well, thank you so much, sir. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with Queen. She keeps Moët Chandon in a pretty cabinet. Let them eat cake, she says, just like Marie Antoinette. Building a remedy. Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right. We're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as $1 a month. Don't fret, all your favorite shows will still be available for free as always, but now you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign up for the ESO Network Patreon's easy. All you have to do is click on the link on the top navigation of the ESO Network website or go to patreon.com/ESO Network. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards. Hey everyone, welcome back to Earth Station 1. Now we are here with the main topic, and we are doing our music spotlight, and we are looking all at Queen. Mike, take it away.
Yes, well, this was my pick. So Queen has been very, very influential in my life, and I can't imagine my life without this this band being part of the soundtrack. So I am very excited to talk all about Queen. And with us we have, of course, the iconic rock segment girl herself. Michelle is here.
Hello.
Hello. Howdy.
Hi.
Welcome back to the main part of the station.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And I know you are a little familiar with Queen.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Says the person who used to go to Queen conventions.
Yes.
So, yes, I can't wait to hear all about those. And we have, of course, Ricky and Bambi are joining us again.
Hello.
Hello. Meow, meow, meow.
Howdy. So, yeah, let's get right to it. Let's talk all about Queen, starting, of course, with our first Queen memories. Michelle, what is your first memory of like, actually, like, the hearing Queen and going, wow, that's a band I need to know more about?
Oh, I remember it so well. I was 12 years old. I was sitting in the dining room of our house and doing homework on a Saturday morning, and the strangest song came on the radio. It had an opera in the middle. And I did homework for so long that it came around on the rotation again. There was that opera again. And I was hooked. And my very good friend had bought a copy of Night at the Opera. And she played 39 for me, which to this day is one of my favorite songs of all time. And that just sealed the deal.
So this was on the radio, though?
Yes.
So you heard Queen on the radio?
Mm-hmm.
I had heard Queen on the radio probably as well, but I think my first sort of introduction to them where I was like, oh, this is a band that I need to pay attention to was my cousin Bill, who we've had on the show, but not in a while, but we've had on the show before. One Christmas, he had gotten the vinyl album, The Game, for Christmas. And I was very impressed by that, and I wanted one. And I didn't end up getting it in vinyl. This is showing my age as well. I ended up getting it in 8-track. So, yes, my first two Queen albums were The Game and the soundtrack to Flash Gordon, both of which I got on 8-track. And the 8-track had a different song order, which has thrown me off my entire life ever since. Because now when I listen to the CDs or whatever, like the songs are not in the right order to me because they were different for the 8-tracks. But The Game was the first one, but Flash Gordon was really the one that I really kicked me up like to 11, because at that point I wasn't really listening to bands and musical artists as much as I was listening to soundtracks. I love soundtracks starting with Star Wars and Battlestar Galactica and all the James Bond soundtracks. And so Queen was that transition from soundtracks, listening to soundtracks, to listening to pop and rock music for me. Very, very influential for me on that front. Bambi, what about you?
I guess I'm not sure when I first heard Queen, but I know that the first time I was aware of who Queen was and like I attached a song to the band name was, it's embarrassing, but Wayne's World. It was totally Wayne's World. That car scene, I was like, oh, this song's awesome. I didn't know that it was Queen, but that's the first time I knew Queen's song was Bohemian Rhapsody. Like I made the connection, and I don't really remember. I don't remember before that. I was familiar with the songs, but I didn't know who they were. It didn't occur to me that it was a band. I was too young, I guess. It was just, you know, music that you hear. It didn't strike me as a band yet.
Yeah, so. It's kind of hard to believe some of the songs, especially We Will Rock You and We Are the Champions, are so iconic and as anthems at all sporting events now that you kind of forget, oh, somebody actually wrote that.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, there was a time before that song existed.
Yes.
What did people chant at sporting events?
Yeah, yeah.
Go team, go team.
Well, that would be an easy song to better.
I know, exactly. I know, right? Ricky, what about you?
Well, for me, I can't remember the first time that I heard Queen. I just remember for the longest time, Queen was one of those bands that I just couldn't stand. And the funny thing about that is I loved all of these Queen songs that I didn't know were Queen, but I hated Queen.
Did you hate them because of the videos?
No, I'd never seen a video of Queen until years later. But it was just, if somebody said, oh, hey, do you like that band Queen? Hell no, I hate Queen. No, I don't like them. But I loved the soundtrack for Flash Gordon, and I loved the soundtrack for Highlander, especially Highlander. And they had One Vision on the Iron Eagle soundtrack, and I owned the Iron Eagle soundtrack, and it said right there, Queen. But still, here I am singing along, Gimme, Gimme, Gimme Fried Chicken. But I was like, you know, I really don't like that band Queen. Well, you sure do sing along with a lot of their songs, dude. So, yeah, for the longest time, I just thought that I didn't like Queen while really enjoying their music. And it wasn't until I was dating a girl who had Queen's greatest hits, and she always wanted to listen to that instead of Rush for some reason. I have no idea why. And I would always say, nope, my car, my songs, we're listening to Rush. And we're not just Rush, we're listening to a Farewell to Kings and Hemispheres over and over.
That's always a hit with the ladies.
Oh, they love it. But jeez, eventually, for some reason, I gave in and I let her put in Queen's Greatest Hits. And the first song came on. I was like, oh, I like this song. This is Queen. And it was kind of like that through most of the album. And that's when I realized I was an idiot.
That's when I realized I was a Queen fan.
I actually forgot I had the Flash Gordon soundtrack, I think, when I was a little kid, too. And I, again, it was just a vinyl record that my parents had in the stack of vinyl records, and I'd listen to it, but I wasn't aware it was a band. It was just a vinyl record that they had.
Baby Lynn, just learning that Queen did the soundtrack.
No, I knew that. I knew that now.
I
had just forgotten again until you mentioned it.
Mike, what about you?
Well, for me, it goes way back a lot further because I'm old.
Older.
And basically, I have to think probably going back and listening probably in the late 70s and probably on either on the car radio or my dad's stereo and hearing Killer Queen for the first time. And just hearing, you know, the different, you know, vocal octaves and changes in it. And it was just amazing. And I was asking, like, who is this? And my parents were like, oh, this is Queen. And, you know, and they, you know, played me, they had on their cassette tapes or the albums, you know, they had the different ones and they, you know, played some of the songs. Some of them I was like, and everything. But there was a couple that were just like mind blowing. And, you know, from then I was a total Queen fan. And what totally won me over was the Flash Gordon soundtrack. And it was just like, oh, this is awesome. And remember seeing then the videos for Radio Gaga and Under Pressure with David Bowie and, you know, with it being starting to be the MTV generation and their portion with it then. And then seeing Live Aid live and seeing Queen do it.
Oh, yeah, I want to talk about Live Aid in a bit, but that, yeah, because that's a significant event. But first, I want to hear, because I know at least one person here has seen Queen in the original form live. So, Michelle, I want you to tell us what that was like. What do you remember from that? You must remember a lot. Or do you? I mean, when was this and what tour was it?
I was lucky enough to see the Hot Space tour, which was great, good fortune, because that was the last time they ever came to the States. And
that would have been what year around?
That was 82.
Okay.
And I saw them at a what we call a shed, an amphitheater outside of Chicago that doesn't exist anymore. It was called Poplar Creek in Hoffman Estates, Illinois.
Oh, Poplar Creek, yes.
And it was a seminal event in my life. It was just tremendous.
Now, were you very far away?
Oh, we were back on the lawn.
Okay, but still, like, because one thing that Queen has the reputation of is being able to play to like infinite crowds, sized crowds.
Yeah, and Freddie did his patented call and response routine. And I remember thinking, oh, I've seen him do that. That's not going to be very exciting. But when it happens, you're just blown away and you are responding and Freddie has you in the palm of his hand. It was incredible. What can I say? Larger than life. Sounded phenomenal, hit after hit after hit. What you've probably seen on like MTV Live, if you watch any of that, and they show the old concerts. I mean, that's what it was like.
Yeah, a lot of their concerts are available on Blu-ray, DVD, whatever video. Yeah, I mean, then their stadium shows, Wembley Stadium, Wembley Arena. What's that one in? Is it Budapest? The one that we saw the
Hungarian Rhapsody was Budapest. There's a very well-known one in Montreal, Queen Rocks.
Yes, Montreal. Yeah, and these are all like huge. Like apparently, Queen was huge everywhere in the world except for the United States, which seems odd.
Well, they were pretty big in the United States.
Right, but I mean, as far as, I don't know, it just seemed like only later did I run across other Queen fans. It seemed like while Queen was on, like they, I don't know, there was some separation between the disconnect between them and the public. So
maybe that was just you.
maybe. But I always felt like they should have been bigger. Like I was always surprised that, you know, folks didn't name them. Because when I was growing up, I mean, it was always like Journey and Styx and AC/DC and everything. And I'm like, but Queen. And they're like, eh, they're all right. But I don't know. So that's maybe, like I said, maybe it's just where I was. The small little town that I was in. Now, Mike, you haven't seen them, right?
No, I never got to see them live. I've seen their concert videos and such. And like I said earlier, you know, it was always one of my dreams. But when they were touring, I was way too young to go see them by myself, and my parents went to go see them without me, sadly enough. You know, but I was probably, when they went to go see them, I was probably like 8 or 9. So
right.
They didn't take the kids to those concerts at that time.
Says the guy who was at Woodstock.
Yeah. So they were too stoned to realize the kids were there. What do you mean?
I was fortunate enough to see, I mean, I caught them with Paul Rogers, when they came around a few years ago, and that's the closest, you know, that we can do now. So, I mean, that was, and I know they're touring now with, Adam Lambert, right? So, and I've heard that's okay. I mean, the band is still the band and they're still really tight, but obviously, you know, since Freddie's gone, it lacks a little something. So they have to kind of, you know, just make do. But as far as albums, singles, what really resonates with you guys? Bambi, what's a song that, or an album that really resonates with you from Queen?
I don't know. But I actually have, I think it's the two greatest hits ones, which at the time when I got them, I didn't think of them as greatest hits. It was just, hey, I have two of their albums.
It's just a really good album.
Yeah, they were great. But I was surprised. I was like, oh, you know, like later, I was like, Bohemian Rhapsody was on one, and I think Killer Queen was on the other. And I think I preferred the one with Killer Queen. I think it was the first one. There was a blue one and a red one.
And right.
I think it was the red one.
That was the second edition of the greatest hits, right?
Yeah,
because there was a greatest hits that I got. I remember that had, like, it was only one CD. It was like, wow, that's not really at all their greatest. Like
that's only
top 10 of theirs.
Yeah, what I think most people know now as their greatest hits is the Hollywood Record versions, which is the red and the blue one. In 1981, they Elektra Records put out the greatest hits, and they did a different single album version for every market. There was a different one for the US than there was for Britain than there was for Europe. And they picked the singles that were big in those territories.
Yeah. So the greatest hits is where you lie. Any particular song off those greatest hits?
Killer Queen. I love Killer Queen. I mean, but there's several, like, you know, of course, Bohemian Rhapsody I loved. And, was it Find Somebody to Love? Find Me Somebody to Love. I love that song, but to be honest, I think I actually prefer the version that George Michael, when he covered it. I like the original, but I like the George Michael one probably better, or at least just as well.
Yeah.
Because both phenomenal singers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember at the time there was a lot of speculation that George Michael was going to either replace him or tour with them or something, do more with Queen than they ended up doing. So, And now we're in, can you believe it? We're in a time where, like, neither one of those guys are around.
I know. It's so sad because I love George Michael.
Ricky, what about you? Is there an album or a track in particular that resonates?
So many for different reasons. The Highlander soundtrack, because I actively, and it, you know, it wasn't even the Highlander soundtrack. It's Some Kind of Magic.
Right, right. Which is, and basically all of the songs on there are in the Highlander movie, with the exception of One Vision, which is in, as you pointed out, Iron Eagle. So it's like Queen's music for new movies. But well, what?
I didn't know that that was an album until years later. But my father and I saw Highlander and both loved the music and looked for the soundtrack for years. Anytime we'd go to a record store, we'd say, do you have the soundtrack for Highlander? And the people who worked at music stores, being the fountain of information that they were, said, no, there is no soundtrack for that movie.
You just weren't going to the right record stores.
Apparently
you're,
so.
You're talking to two people who used to work in record stores, and we knew.
So that was a big one for me. But in a completely different way, as a musician years and years later, Crazy Little Thing Called Love stands out because it, not that they hadn't already shown how amazingly versatile they were,
genre bending,
but Crazy Little Thing Called Love, that's the song that for me as a musician made me realize these guys can do anything. I mean, there are a lot of great bands out there, but there aren't a lot of bands that can just cross genres like it's nothing.
Yeah, and that's the one thing
really
I really like
to do that.
That's the one thing I really loved about that first album that I got, which was The Game, which has got Crazy Little Thing I'll Love on it. And it's got, like, every track is completely different, like in a different style, different genre, if you will. And they're mixing, they're blending. And yet when you listen to the album in its entirety, even if you listen to the songs in a weird order, like I did on the A-track, it still sounds like it's the same band and it works. It works all together.
Is that the one that had Body Language on it?
No.
Okay,
sorry, I like that.
Sorry, that's not one of my favorites. But no, it's also got Another One Bites the Dust on it.
Oh yeah.
Dragon Attack. Don't Try Suicide. It's a really powerful record. And that combined with, we've mentioned the Flash Gordon soundtrack over and over again, but I can't tell you how much I listened to both of those 8-tracks over and over and over and over again. I'm like you, Ricky, where I liked Kind of Magic as well. I love the story about the making of that album, where Russell McKay, the director of Highlander, and the producers only wanted one song out of Queen.
Yeah.
The Queen was only supposed to write the one song, which was Who Wants to Live Forever, I think. And they saw a rough cut of the movie and they said, we want to do more. And of course, Russell McKay is like, nah, no. He's like, no, okay, you want to do more? And each one of the band members wrote a track, at least one track, for the album and for the soundtrack. And they're all outstanding. Like, you know, John Deacon's track is just as good as Brian May's, is just as good as Freddie's, is just as, like, they all contribute. They all were so inspired by that movie to write these really awesome songs, again, that are really different, but they all fit so well together on that record. It's just, I don't know if I've ever seen a combination of four unique individuals that blended so well in a band. Usually you have like one or two people that kind of front the band. Yeah, and then, but this case, it was just a mixture of all four were perfect.
And you know, you can't, going back to talking about how versatile they are, you almost can't have a major band that does that anymore. You know, it's like the record labels and the entertainment industry, just the system won't let you have a band that's that big, that is as versatile as Queen used to be. You know, you can have a small band that can get out there through the internet, But it's just for decades, record labels really haven't supported that kind of thing. They want to be able to pigeonhole you really easily and say, well, this band does this, and that's what they do. And you have people who change over time, like, and believe me, I am not comparing the two, but like Taylor Swift, who started out country and went more pop. But you don't have artists who have the freedom to just do anything that they want to do.
Yeah, I get the strong feeling that we're going to see that it wasn't an easy battle for them, especially when the movie comes out in November. Seeing the trailer for it already, we know that there's a lot of things that Queen did that broke ground, and it wasn't like an easy thing. I'm sure the record company was like, sure, you can make this. How long is Behind the Eyes? It's like 12 minutes.
5 minutes, 55 seconds.
Really? That's it?
Yeah.
It's only like 6 minutes, under 6 minutes. Wow. It's so epic.
Yeah, but that's two, almost 3 minutes longer than pop hits were at the time. And yeah, the BBC, EMI Records, their label in Britain, wanted that song cut down. They didn't want to do it. And I think it was Kenny Everett, if I remember right, who's a DJ. And he did the old trick of locking himself in the studio and playing it repeatedly. And kind of backed EMI into a corner with it.
Yeah. Well, it's, yeah. And just not only the length of it, though, but just the content and the risk they took musically with that just that one track.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And it's a track that they really, I mean, I know that they may do, but it's not a track that's made for being played live. I mean, you need a full orchestra and everything like that to play live. When they play it live, they have to, it's recorded,
right? Left the stage and played recording of the opera section. But they left the stage to make it absolutely clear that they were not miming anything.
Right.
It was a light show. But they said, we cannot reproduce that to the degree of quality that, so.
It's probably nice too, because it gave them a break.
Yeah.
Go pee, get some water.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Freddie can change outfits again.
Yep, exactly.
Mike, what about you? What's a particular either album or track or that is the top of your Queen list?
Well, goes all the way back to A Day at the Races for me. You know, it's just, I loved everything about it, from, you know, Tie Your Mother Down and, you know, all the different ones after that. It just, it's a lot of fun. And it almost seemed like every time you had, you know, different songs that came out from them, you know, you had Somebody to Love and, you know, stuff like that. It was just awesome, because basically, you know, Freddie's voice was so like a breath of fresh air and so strong. It was just amazing. And then having, you know, them experiment with the orchestras, like you guys have mentioned, and to, you know, have different people singing different parts and the harmonies. And it was just amazing. You know, when I saw Highlander the first time, I didn't even know Queen had done the soundtrack for it. And it was just amazing to hear, you know, them doing the theme for it. And, you know, and now whenever you see anything with Highlander, you hear Queen and everything. But I will admit this. I will be the first one to admit this right now. I am truly sick of Bohemian Rhapsody. You know, I loved Wayne's World, but damn it, because of
that. Yeah, that one really just made it, like, it wasn't popular enough.
Exactly. Exactly. And it just took it to the stratosphere, and you heard it everywhere. And three songs I can't listen to all the way through is Bohemian Rhapsody, Hotel California, and also Stairway to Heaven. Yeah. And Get Me Drunk One Night at Dragon Con or at a bar, if you see me there, I will tell you the story why. Because there is a reason why. So, and, you know, I might have even mentioned it before on the podcast. But, yeah, I'll tell you the story. And I love, you know, the different versions of it. Even, you know, having William grow up, you know, hearing Queen, because he, like, when he was little, you know, when he heard Killer Queen, he's like, Dad, why does she have lasers coming out of her eyes? You know, it's like, it's like, son, don't take lyrics so literally. he was 4 or 5 at the time, but, you know, he loved it too. And then when the Muppets did their version of Bohemian Rhapsody, it was just awesome.
Oh, that's adorable.
And, you know, and it's just some great, great stuff. And now with this movie coming out, it's just, it is something to look forward to. You know, I hope it takes, you know, introduces more people even more to Queen, you know.
And that's, talking about introducing more people to Queen, that's sort of the counter argument to Wayne's World. I think an entire new generation learned about Queen, you know, people who maybe had heard the songs but weren't as familiar with them. All of a sudden now, okay, this is a big song. And I understand for people mm-hmm. who've heard Bohemian Rhapsody 1,000 times before that movie came out, it did get a little overplayed. But for a whole new generation, it was a new song.
Exactly. No, you're exactly right, Ricky. And, you know, it's going to be the same thing now. And I'm hoping a lot of their older songs get a lot of love in the movie.
You know, yeah, it would be amazing to me if one of their hits from a different country started getting radio play here for the first time. Because, you know, Queen, they're in no shortage of American hits. I mean, they don't have a string of hits. They have a rope of hits. But it would be great if some of the songs that were really popular in the UK started getting play over here for the first time. I would love that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I agree completely. And I think that was, you know, that's one of the hopes I have from the movie. And, you know, I do get worried about some of the biops that, you know, we've seen. You know, look at Jim Morrison's The Doors, you know, a couple years back, many years back. And it was good at the time, but it doesn't hold up. I'm hoping this does, because the guy they have playing Freddie is just spectacular.
Dialing away from the movie a little bit, because I'm sure we're going to talk all about that in November. Michelle, what's an album or a song for you that resonates? I mean, I know it's hard, difficult for you, especially with there's so many. Like, it's like it's probably easier to count the songs that or albums that don't do it for you.
It would have to be Night at the Opera.
Yeah.
You never forget your first, so they say.
Yeah.
love Night at the Opera. Love Brian's compositions on Night at the Opera. Prophet's Song, 39, Good Company. Love that album.
Yeah, and that's probably not one that a lot of people really could pick up on in knowing those songs. Because I don't think, you know, those are the ones that people think of as big hits.
And one secret weapon that they had... was they had a perfect producer in Roy Thomas Baker, who would Roy also produced Journey. He produced the Cars. He's responsible for those big stacked backing vocals on the first Cars album. He was just the right guy for them. Theatrical, big, over the top, willing to push the envelope. He was just a crucial part of their success.
Yeah, well, like you said, it's important to have somebody on your side and having your back on that if you want to do something new. Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to say their secret weapon was Deacon Shorts. So,
you had to go there, Mikey.
If you see the arena tour, any of the arena shows, John Deacon has a special kind of shorts. So, just be warned.
Yeah, think of 1970s NBA.
Yeah, there you go. Except for a little English dude. All right. 1985. One of the biggest concerts events ever. You have the creme de la creme performing both in the UK and actually all over the world and in Philadelphia primarily. I mean, these are the top names in the industry and actually legends, Hall of Famers, even before there was a Hall of Fame. we're performing here, but I think
most people would agree that if it was a battle of the bands, that Queen comes out way, way, way on top. I do remember seeing that performance, and I will never, yeah, it's one that I'll never forget, because I just was, that was the closest I'd seen, like, to seeing them live at all. I'd seen some of their concert footage before that, but this was like seeing them in a live show, and they just killed it. Absolutely killed it. Did anybody else? I know, Michelle, you saw that live.
Saw that live.
And obviously you agree.
Yes.
But was there, what about it though? Because I know they're going to reenact that in the movie. Mm-hmm. Is there something about that performance that was important to the band?
I have since then, in the years since then, I've read a lot about, Queen's star was on the wane, and they weren't that big, and they had a lot to prove. And for me at the time, Queen was my band. I was totally unaware of any of that. They were huge in my eyes. And for me, it was a brilliant performance, but it was a Queen performance. I mean, none of it surprised me. One thing I would point out is a lot of people were, they had a big stage show. They relied on gimmicks. No. Live Aid, there was virtually no lights, no effects.
Just the four of them.
And speaking of secret weapons, one of the reasons they were so good in that set, Bob Geldof said that they understood better than anybody the global jukebox concept. They did medleys from the time of their second tour. They knew better than any band there, most of which I don't think had ever done a medley. Queen knew how to put all the hooks and sequence them just right for the maximum impact.
On a huge crowd.
Yeah. And when you combine that with Mr. Showbiz, another thing Geldof said, he could pounce about in front of the whole world. You had, no pun intended, magic.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Queen had another thing that a lot of these other bands didn't have, and that was enough hits that they could do medleys.
Yes.
and still fill a set.
Yep.
Yeah, because Led Zeppelin didn't have enough of those.
Did Led Zeppelin play live?
They did, but you know what? They are so embarrassed by their performance. You can YouTube it and you can catch it, because some people have recorded it, but they didn't allow it to be released on the DVD. They've never signed off on it. They're kind of, actually most people agree that was one of the least performances.
Yeah. Phil Collins was on drums, and for years they have blamed each other for why the set was such a disaster.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
I love Phil Collins, but Phil Collins and Led Zeppelin just, I mean, wow, that
a jazzy type of drummer.
If someone told me, yeah, Led Zeppelin's getting back together to do this one show, my first question would have been, and I was actually about to ask, well, who are they getting to play drums? And if you had said Phil Collins, I would be like, oh, wow.
I'd want to see it.
I've got to see that. I've got to see that in the way that you've got to see a train wreck.
Yeah, well.
Train wreck. I'd be curious. I'd be like, I love Phil Collins, and I like Led Zeppelin.
You can YouTube it.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's about the only way you're going to see it, because it's never going to be officially released, I think.
No, I remember seeing it live, and it was just like, wow, this is bad. But I don't blame Phil Collins for it. It just was not a good set.
Yeah.
But I do remember the day after, going to school and everything, and everybody was talking about Queen like it was a surprise. Like, I can't believe they were that was awesome. And I'm like, I was kind of like Michelle. I'm like, yeah, they're always great.
You were in school in July?
Yeah. You know. Wow, Mike.
I had to stay back. It was like, I don't like to talk about it, but,
this says so much about you, Mikey.
It really does. All right. I know we're going to have to wrap it up pretty soon, but before we do, I want to talk to Ricky and Mammy in particular about Queen songs. Surely, as a cover, when you're doing covers, you must have had to perform some of these numbers.
Oh, we have absolutely had to try.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
Are there any in particular that are the most requested?
Yeah, Bohemian Rhapsody, by far, no question about it.
And let me guess, you have attempted it?
Oh, yeah, of course.
And, you know, imagine how badly that would probably go. And that probably isn't as accurate as the situation. It was worse than what you're probably imagining. We attempted Crazy Little Thing Called Love, too, which is way harder than it sounds.
Yes. Well,
simple?
Deceivingly difficult.
But, yeah. But I want to say this. Crazy Little Thing Called Love is not a rock song.
No, it's all about feel.
And we are a rock band. Yeah. And we're a rock band that tries to play other kinds of music in a rock way, but you just can't do Crazy Little Thing Called Love unless you're either really good or that's the style that you play.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah, we have over the years had requests for a lot of Queen songs.
Another
but
one
Bohemian Rhapsody is by far the one we get the most requests for. We have
We Will Rock You. We've done that one a good
Yeah, we've too. Done We Will Rock You. We've tried Crazy Little Thing Called Love. We've tried
Fat
a few.
Girls.
Oh yeah, we've tried Fat Bottom Girls.
We've done that a couple times. That one bad. I need to relearn that.
But with most of those songs, Fat Bottom Girls included, we didn't actually know them at all the first time we tried to play them. I mean, we knew them from hearing the radio, not from ever sitting with a musical instrument and thinking, huh, I should learn this song. It was a case of someone in the crowd saying, hey, play Fat Bottom Girls. And me looking at whoever was playing guitar that night and saying, can we pull this off? And the guitar player saying, no. And me saying, all right, what key are we going to do it in?
Yep. As one of the guitar players, yep.
Yeah, for those of you listening who have never seen the band Radio Cult perform before, one of the things that we are very well known amongst our fans for doing is playing songs that we have no idea how to play in front of whoever happens to be there that night, whether it be three people or 3,000 people. We have absolutely no issues with making complete fools of ourselves by attempting and failing to play your favorite song.
I love that you think we have fans.
Well, you have your fan is on the show tonight.
Aww.
I would always think that just like as far as just considering the album, The Game, I always felt that as much as Dragon Attack was a drummer's dream song, that Another One Bites the Dust would be a bass player's dream song. Is that not true?
No.
It sounds like it would be a bass player's dream to you just because you noticed the bass part. It features the bass riff.
And it was written by a bass player.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is an example of a song that's practically a bass solo that disproves the theory that everybody talks through the bass solo.
Right.
I mean, even Freddie Mercury made it for a minute or so before he started talking during the bass solo.
True. So, yeah. And so that would be so that's not one of the ones that comes up a lot?
No.
No, surprisingly,
not.
Because that one was huge.
Yeah.
Oh, they had a ton of hits.
Yeah, yeah.
Bohemian Rhapsody is the song. I mean, with a lot of bands, if you say what's the biggest, and I don't mean bands that only had one hit, but when you're talking about Led Zeppelin or you're talking about Aerosmith, any bands that had a ton of hit songs, there's usually one that stands out, but you get a request for all kinds of stuff. That is not the case with Queen. It's like 99% Bohemian Rhapsody, 1% everything else.
Yeah.
Okay, so, man.
Mike's cringing.
These shows go by so fast. So
we can't skip one of my favorite things about it.
Yeah, Brian no,
May
go ahead.
Is an astrophysicist.
What's
yes,
that?
He is.
Brian May is famous also as an astrophysicist.
It's true. It is a passion of his.
Doctor.
Yes.
Brian.
Yes.
Doctor. Exactly.
Brian. Yes, you're right. Doctor.
I actually saw him speak once. It was awesome.
Oh, I'm jealous.
Yeah,
How's he, that?
Oh, it was that one. It was in Seattle. It was awesome. He came to UW and did a lecture. It was just like, it was like, I am so there.
And do you remember what the lecture was about? Like what his topic was?
It was about the space project he was working on.
New Horizons, probably.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And
for those that don't know, that's what all those famous photos of Pluto recently, that's what New Horizons was.
Mm-hmm. And he was really instrumental in getting it made, actually.
Yeah, yeah. And Asteroid Day, he's one of the co-founders of our now famous Asteroid Day, which, you know, brings asteroid awareness, planetary protection.
And it was funny because I took the woman I was dating at the time and I was like, I want to go see a lecture. And she's like, you want to go see a lecture? I said, yeah, it's Brian May. And she was like, who?
I said, oh.
It didn't last that much longer. Well, since I
that should have been a like indicator right there.
The guy who writes all those movie scores.
I have actually met Brian May personally.
Yes.
I would have loved to have seen a lecture, but I have.
But
I
she saw a concert instead. Oh, well.
Darn. I pity you, Michelle.
He was slated to open for Guns N' Roses. This was 93. Of course, Guns N' Roses didn't make it on stage. That leg of the tour was canceled. So they really quick rescheduled him for what used to be called the Roxy Theater in Buckhead here in Atlanta. And I worked at Ticketmaster at the time, and I whined and fussed at the venue rep until I got a ticket to the meet and greet. And if you've ever seen an interview with him, he is soft spoken. He is the loveliest man. He is one of my heroes in life. I just adore him, and he is a kind and wonderful man.
So I want to make sure we get this clear. So Brian May is not only an amazing guitarist, but he's an amazing astrophysicist. Uh-huh. Freddie is just an amazing like character. Like he's just right. Freddie. He's just amazing.
He was an artist. He designed the crust.
That's true. Right. Yeah. That's right. Yep. Deacon is amazing because of his shorts. in addition to playing the bass play. So that list leaves Roger. So what claim to fame does Roger have besides being just an amazing guitarist and songwriter as well? Got nothing?
He was in Queen. That's enough, right?
He got to hang out with the other guys, too.
Well, here's a question. Speaking of John and Roger, got a question for Ricky and Bambi. Ricky in particular. Over the years, I've heard some kind of disparaging remarks about Queen's rhythm section being merely serviceable. What's your opinion of them as a rhythm section?
Well, there are those of the school of thought that think if you're not ridiculously busy when you're playing, you must not be very good. But honestly, some of the most difficult drumming is very simple. It's much harder to play a simple, slow song and keep the tempo exactly the same when you're a drummer than it is to play something that's really complicated. And with Queen's rhythm section, they weren't always as flashy as Rush or Led Zeppelin, but I don't think that that's any indication of a lack of talent. I think it's much more an indication of an abundance of taste.
That's what I was going to say. It just means that they have taste sometimes. Good tact in musical.
They just play well with the song, and they don't. It didn't feel to me, listening to their music, like they felt they had to stand out. You know, they played what they needed to play for the song to be as good as the song could be.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I actually agree with that because it seems like to me some of the best players don't stick out. They're so good that they can make something difficult too not noticeable. It's all about feel and what's right for the song, and I think the guys in Queen really did do that well.
Yeah, and I think in order to have, like, when you've got a guitarist and someone who's as talented, especially with the solos, as Brian May, and then a vocalist like Freddie,
it's important to have that foundation for them to stand on while and let the other two guys just really go.
All of them were actually really good singers.
That's
true. People think Freddie Mercury, you know, is phenomenal, yes, which he is. But a lot of those backing vocals, that's pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And Roger and Brian both have had hits on their own.
Yeah. And it's like having four good singers in a band, that's not common.
No.
Well, having one good singer in a band these days.
Well, cool. All right. So we got to wrap it up. So before we get out of here, like we usually do with these spotlights, we recommend one thing that people should check out if they haven't already about the band Queen. It could be a record. It could be a performance. It could be a video. It could be a book. It could be anything. So we will start with you, Mike.
Wow. Me. Okay.
Yes, you.
I was just thinking about it as you were saying it. For somebody who's not really familiar with Queen, I would recommend for them to see one of their greatest performances, and that has to be the Live Aid performance. It is so inspirational because Freddie was sick already at this point. And he got up there on stage and he gave it his all. And you could see it in him that he was giving it his all. And it is truly breathtaking. And part of me actually even hopes with this movie that's coming out that that's where they end the movie. Because to me, it's one of their best performances. And it's not just because of the singing and stuff. They've done other great performances. But just what it meant and everything all the way around. And he had the crowd in his hand. It was just amazing.
Yeah, okay. Bambi?
Mine is going to be a suggestion that I actually discovered today. I had looked it up. I had never seen the music video for I Want to Break Free, but that is so much fun. Oh my God.
Yes.
Like, that is so fun. So that's mine because I enjoyed that. You can see how much fun the guys are having. And then the other sections, you know, when they're not in drag, but like the other sections where the dancers are going, it's just a pretty video. But just seeing the enjoyment on all of their faces in drag, that's just hilarious. I love that. So that's, I want to say that.
They were a band that definitely awesome. Had a sense of yes. sense of humor.
Well, you know what? That's nice. That's good to see. It's that, you know, we're not afraid to do this. We're just going to have fun. And it seems like that was before this would be like a safe video to do. You know, there's Cutting yes. Edge, and then there's this, which is totally tongue-in-cheek, but also, you know, with Freddie's history of, you know, not fully coming out to the public, you know, it's right. just, I don't know.
Yeah, at that time, it was still pretty taboo to talk about that sort of thing.
Yeah, so seeing all of them in drag and him just being totally fierce.
With that said, British comedy has a history of men in drag.
That is true, but I don't know. It's just, this is such a fun video.
So, it is.
Yeah.
Good call.
Yeah.
Ricky, what about you?
They had this one song called Bohemian Rhapsody.
He's like, you know, I'm checking out.
Where's that disconnect button?
Exactly.
I actually was going to say what Mike had said. Seeing Queen playing at Wembley or seeing Queen Live Aid, you know, that just amazing live band. And I think there's no chance of seeing Freddie Mercury perform in person, but seeing some of those videos of them performing live, I think gives a better representation than anything else of what they were all about. No one song, no one album can really sum them up.
Yeah.
And the closest thing that I think can sum up what is Queen is seeing one of their, all their shows I imagine were very good, but seeing one of the ones that's just considered the top of the Queen shows, that would be my recommendation, is just to see one of those shows. They're amazing.
Joe?
Hmm. trying to narrow it down. I've already talked about my great love for Night at the Opera, but I would also recommend, if you're not familiar with their older catalog, their pre Crazy Little Thing catalog, go back and check out Sheer Heart Attack, which was the predecessor to Night at the Opera. Brilliant album from start to finish. And also on YouTube, check out some of the live stuff, some of their older live stuff, and just marvel at what a polished band they were so early in their career as a live act. There's a recording from, I forgot the theater. There's a live recording of White Queen as it began from the 74 tour that is just breathtaking.
And it's tough. I'm going to go with, I want to go with Flash Gordon. I kind of have to keep up the family tradition.
Hold on. Color me shocked right here on the spot.
I know we've talked about the movie several times on this podcast. We even did a whole podcast about it. I can't think of another band that could have pulled off that soundtrack in a way that, if you take that soundtrack away from that movie blows. It's just that simple. It's so integral, but it made the lives of, I think, the filmmakers a lot easier, because they're like, all we have to do is put these images to this music and we've got ourselves a thing. So I think it's so important.
Are you saying Timothy Dalton didn't make that film?
I am saying that clear. As much scenery as he could chew and everybody else, they was lucky there were any sets left. No, it's a favorite movie, and the soundtrack was one that I listened to over and over again. I love it. I love it. I love it. And it was just a thing, like I said, that a lot of bands didn't do. Like a lot of rock bands, if they were put in the same scenario, they couldn't pull it off. But yet they were able to pull off a really good score in addition to, you know, some really good songs. And, you know, I mean, for years I was like, look, Brian May doing the wedding march, come on. That's just amazing. Like, who doesn't want to get married to that? Very cool. Well, thanks once again for being here for our music spotlight. And we will be right back with the ESO Network Condom.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this Geek Girl is talking about the new Venture Brothers Season 7. Yes, it finally happened, and after over a year of waiting, we have a new Venture Brothers season. And it started off with a blast, and right from where Season 6 ended. Right now, we just have the starting three episodes, which is a trilogy-style story. We get to see the Venture Tower being haunted, the villains trying to find Blue Morpho, and Hank Venture trying to save his relationship with his new girlfriend. It is a riot from the start, and even though it has been so long since Season 6, it was so easy to catch up, even without having to binge last season. So, if you are a Venture Brothers fan, go find these episodes and watch them. I actually had not seen any previews that they were starting, so I was super thrilled when I did notice that Season 7 started. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Earth Station 1. Now it's time for the ESO Network Con Report.
Mike, there's only one convention. There's only one convention that matters. All year round, the only reason that we have the Con Report is this one convention. You could even argue the only reason we have this podcast is because of this convention. It is Dragon Con time. It is almost upon us. I think there's a little under 2 weeks as we're talking. And it's on us, man. It's going to be insane.
You will be able to find all sorts of ESO Network folks at this event, including myself and Mike. Ashley Pauls will be there for the first time ever. So that's going to be, she's just going to be, if you want to know what Ashley looks like at the con, she's just going to be the one with huge eyes walking around like, oh my God, like, but a big smile.
She'll be like, what did I get myself into?
Is Ashley doing any cosplay? She does cosplay, right?
Yeah, she's a Jedi.
Yeah. So she's not a member of the 501st, though, is she?
No.
We don't know.
That's Alex.
Yeah, it's Alex. So Ashley will be at the Dragon Con for first time. And also you can find Mary Ogle, who will be, this is her third?
No, this second, is just third? Her second.
Second. Okay. So this will be her second, Mary, from the many appearances that she's been on Earth Station One, as well as Earth Station Who. Kevin Eldridge from the Flopcast. He is, I actually met him for the first time at Dragon Con many years ago. And, that's it's always good to see him. Angela Pritchett, the geek girl herself, will be there. The Nerd Bliss cast of Chris, Tina, Eric, and Dan will be there. I know Chris and Tina. I don't know if I've met Eric and Dan. Have you?
Yes, I have, when I was at South Carolina Comic Con.
Ah, they were all there for that too?
Of course.
So it'll be great to see them for you again, for me, the first time. Thomas from the Geekly Oddcast will be there, and Joe and Brad from the Cigar Nerds will be smoking some stogies. I sound so old when I say that, but I think I sound old when I say almost anything.
Will they be drinking some sarsaparilla there, Mr. Mike?
Exactly. Here we're getting some lemonade. But Joe and Brad will be there. They're always fun. There's going to be a lot of friends of the station will be there, of course. Rebecca Perry, the award-winning Bobby Nash, the not-so-award-winning J.R. Mounts. Tons and tons of people are going to be there. There's going to be 90,000 people. And as far as I'm concerned, every single one of them is going to be is a friend of the station. So we will be having a big old party with our big friends and our closest friends. And we will also be doing a lot of panels and events. And we want to let you know exactly where you can find us. And we'll start with Mike, since his panel schedule is kind of crazy. You got a lot of panels, my friend. Is it a cool dozen?
I think I'm at 11 right now.
Oh, he's working the line. He's getting there.
I'm getting close. I am getting close. I have to say, starting on Friday at 10 a.m., I will be on the Classic Sci-Fi Legends, which is remembering Margot Kidder, Harlan Ellison, and Steve Ditko.
That's going to be a sad. Last year, I was on the Remembering Adam West panel, and it was very sad and moving. But it was very nice to share that with a lot of people. So I understand that, you know, it seems like a weird way to start a convention. But apparently, I mean, that's one of the nice things that Dragon Con does is it brings everybody in and they all kind of share stories and fandom for these people together.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then I have at 2:30 on Friday also, I have with the podcasting track, I have networking, the why, when, and how of joining a podcast network. So that should be a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
And then at 8:30 p.m. on Friday, this is what you're going to be involved in.
This is my first panel of the weekend as well.
The greatest Michaels and Michelles in classic sci-fi.
All the Michaels, all the Michelles will be there. It's going to be Michaelicious.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be pretty darn awesome. Then on Saturday, I'm going to miss the parade for the first time in 15 years.
Oh, no.
But it's so worth it because through the classic sci-fi...
Ready, Pop?
Yep.
Ready, son?
Uh-huh.
Let's go.
We are doing Schoolhouse Rock celebrates the 45th anniversary. That's what's happening. And so it should be a lot of fun, and I'm sure there will be some singing.
Oh, yeah. That's you can't just say Schoolhouse Rock. You have to sing it.
Exactly. So it should be kind of fun. Saturday at 1 p.m., I'm doing the Red Dwarf panel, which is 30 years of Red Dwarf.
Whew.
So that's going to be a lot of fun. That's through the Brit Tracks.
And they're not done yet.
Oh, no, not yet. Okay, and then I am free right now until Sunday at 10 a.m. when we do, I have something I've been looking forward to for quite some time. Earth Station 1 abides with the Big Lebowski's 20th anniversary.
20th?
That's right. Right Russians for everyone in the room. It's a good morning.
And the best part of all is people can might be able to walk away with something.
That's right. We are bringing a rug. That's right, because it will complete the room up, and it will be auctioned off at the panel, and it'll all go towards the DragonCon charity.
Awesome. That's so, really cool.
So, yeah. So we're bringing a rug that Judy and I are donating, and it's going to be actually a lot of fun. Then we are doing at 2:30 through the Brit Tracks on Sunday, Earth Station Who presents the 12th Doctor Retrospective.
So I will be part of that. That's going to be a lot of fun. I'll talking all about Doctor number 12.
Mm-hmm. And Mary will be involved with that also because we're doing a live recording of Earth Station Who.
Yes. So, and it's going to be kind of a mini Michael Con panel because there's going to be a few Michaels on that panel.
Yeah, exactly. There's going to be a Michael Faber, a Michael Gordon, a Michael Faulkner, a Mary Ogle, and a Sue Kissenweather.
Sue.
So she's the odd one. She's the only one not starting with the M.
No, no. She's not the only odd one. No, there's a bunch of odd ones. But,
odd is a whole different story.
Absolutely. That's going to be a lot of fun. And we're recording that one, too.
Yes, we are.
We're recording all of these.
Oh, yes, of course, we're recording all these. Some will be on Patreon, some will be on the regular podcast. You just have to wait to find out which is which. Ha, ha, ha. Then we are doing How to Start Your Own Indie Podcast. That is at 4 p.m. on Sunday. And that's through the podcasting track again. And it's going to be a lot of fun. So it's basically how to basically start a podcast. And, you know, when I teach my classes and such, we talk about it. Mike and I actually did a similar podcast panel when we were at Atlanta Comic Con a couple weeks back. And it was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun and very important to a lot of people starting out. It was quite a good panel.
Exactly. Then Sunday night at 7 p.m., I'm going to be doing my first panel with the American Sci-Fi track. And we are doing Westworld Season 2.
Gotcha. Wait a minute. You did Westworld Season 1, though.
Last year, yes.
But it wasn't... Oh, I see. This is the first one that you're doing with them this year.
Yes.
Okay. I thought you meant like first one ever.
No. I've done plenty.
Gotcha. That's what I thought.
Yeah, I've done plenty with Kellen and their group. And they do a great, great track, folks. And it's just like... There's just so much that they do, and I just don't have enough time to do all the different shows and such. So I do understand that. So then Monday at 11:30 a.m., I am going back to the Brit Tracks, and we are doing Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman's Good Omens and More, which should be a lot of fun. And that'll be what I finish off my Brit Tracks with. But then at 1 p.m., I go back to the American Sci-Fi track. And wrapping up my Dragon Con, we are talking all about The Tick.
Wow. Okay. That's a new one. I did not know you were doing that.
That's right, folks. That's right, my friends. Arthur and The Tick will be there. And that's right. We are here to help protect the city.
That's awesome.
So it should be a lot of fun, and The Tick is just awesome. If you haven't had a chance to see it on the new version of it on Amazon, check it out. And, you know, there's a better version of Deathstroke on that show than even on Arrow or any of the movies you've seen.
Well, I am doing four panels total throughout the weekend, and two of them we've already mentioned because I will be on The Greatest Michaels and Michelles in Classic Sci-Fi, as well as ESW presents the 12th Doctor Retrospective. The other two panels that I'll be doing are, this one's my baby. This is the third annual Art of the Tiki, Tiki Pop Art panel. This has it's sort of becoming a tradition now. This is where all the tiki heads gather on Sunday at 11:30. It is in America's Mart. It is going to be on the fourth floor, so it's a little bit of a different venue for us. But actually, we haven't had it in the same room twice in a row, so we're always moving around, us tiki folks. And it'll be myself as well as Derek Yaniger, Stephanie Gladden, as an artist. She's been on the show before. Savannah Alexandra, who's an artist that I encountered at MomoCon, and I really dig her stuff, so it's going to be fun to talk to her. And our good friend Jonathan Chafin. He will be there, the horror and clay guy. He will be rounding out the panel. We're going to have a lot of fun talking all about tiki stuff. So look out for that one. And then I'm going to finish my panel convention experience on Monday at 1 p.m. And again, in the comics area, it's a comics track. It's the State of Comics Industry 2018. I will be moderating that panel with some professionals and indie people, including Sanford Green and Kara McGee, Amy Memberson, Gabo, and a couple of other folks. It's really going to be depending on who's still there on Monday, because a lot of people do leave. So last year we ended up with only a couple people, but we still had a great time. So it's, as far as panelists, there was still a bunch of people in the room. So it is going to be really fun to talk all about the State of Comics in 2018 with those folks. And that's going to be a really good way to end the whole event, I think. So we've got a lot of other stuff going on. There's going to be some ESO get-togethers and functions, and you'll be able to find out about those go to the ESO Network Facebook group and just look for that for the latest and greatest where you can find us. You can always message Mike or myself to find out where we are. Now that the app is live and active, you can text us, you can contact us through the app, you can befriend us and all that. So we want to meet you. This is one of the highlights for us, is at Dragon Con. One of the best things about Dragon Con is hanging out with ESO Network folks and meeting listeners. There's been so many listeners that I've met at Dragon Con, and it really is a great experience every time. So come by. When I'm not doing panels, you can find me in Artist Alley at table 831. That's 831. It's the same date that the convention starts, 831. So just think 8:31. You can come visit me at 8:31 on 8:31. I will be at my table with some new merchandise, including a Earth Station 1/ESO Network related item, but hopefully that's going to get here in time. So come by the table, say howdy. We love seeing you guys. This is what we live for. We do this podcast because we love talking about all this stuff. And Dragon Con is a time when we can spend a weekend with hanging out with people like our listeners, like you guys. And we just can't say enough about how much the experience is, just how much of a great experience it is for us. And I'm getting tongue-tied just even thinking about it, Mike, because I can't believe it's almost here. So after Dragon Con, we will fill the con report with as many events as you can find ESO Network people at, those of us who are still recovering from Dragon Con. It might be a while, but I know that there's some shows that we'll be at, so we'll let you know about those. If you've got a convention that you're going to be at that's not Dragon Con, then let us know so we can talk to you about it all over. We can help promote it. You can rave about it. But in the meantime, we'll see you at Dragon Con.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. I want to thank our guests for being here this week. Bambi and Ricky, thank you guys so, so much.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Anything you guys want to shout out about? Any appearances and such?
Well, we've always got lots of different shows happening and lots of different things going on. But lately, we've been working so much on this follow-up soundtrack to this comic book called Tiki Zombie.
No, I know. It's
that
crazy.
It's just taking up all our time.
Oh, that's awesome.
Dead silence. That's hilarious. There's the what?
I don't know what that is. That sounds like something you've just made up.
I think they did make it up just to see what your reaction would be, Mr. Gordon.
Well, it is awesome. And obviously the title track, Cthulhu Owl, is available. You can actually hear it on our, if nobody's ever heard it, I definitely encourage them to check out our my YouTube channel, because they've got the Possum King of Wanderers performing at least one version of it. So that's pretty cool.
By the time, if you're listening to this podcast and it's a little bit older, you can probably hear it on YouTube.
I hope so.
Yes.
Or I said YouTube. You just said YouTube. Yeah. iTunes.
iTunes. Yes, that's where you hear music.
The Eye of Tunes. The Tunes of Eye.
One of those technology places. MySpace. I don't know. What is GeoCities.
Angel Fire.
That is awesome, guys. Thank you guys so much for joining us for our regular music segment. And actually, we might as well announce it next time out. Ricky, it's going to be your pick.
Sweet!
Oh. Yep, and I think you already chose U2.
I did.
Yeah, so we're staying in the UK.
with bands that performed at Live Aid.
Exactly.
Yeah. Actually, almost all the bands that we've done so far have done at Live Aid. They were performed at Live Aid. Yes, except, I mean, the Beatles didn't, but actually two of them did, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, two of them did.
Yeah, so that was, I remember there were being rumors that the Beatles were going to reunite at Live Aid. But,
well, John was already gone.
I mean, as much as they
could. Yeah, I was going to say John was already gone by then.
Right, as much as they could. But so, yeah, that's cool. So, yeah, we got a Live Aid theme going.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool. And, of course, Mr. Mike, thank you so much.
As always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you want to shout out about, sir?
I do. About a few weeks ago at the Atlanta Comic Convention, I had the wonderful pleasure of meeting and chatting with Renee O'Connor. She is best known for being the sidekick, Gabrielle, on the Xena series. And she is now a producer of indie films, and she's got one that premieres actually this week. It's called Watch the Sky. It's about two brothers who spot UFOs, and craziness happens after that. It's a low-budget sci-fi movie. I think it's available on video on demand, as well as I think you can get it on Blu-ray as well. But, it's not a huge budget, but we'll have a link to the trailer in it so people can check it out, and I recommend everybody give it a look.
That is very awesome. Cool. Yeah. That is really awesome. We'll have a link for it on the show notes, of course. And Michelle, it was great having you up on the regular show tonight.
Thanks. Always good to be here.
It was nice hearing you more than a 5-minute segment. Anything you want to shout out about?
Well, let's see. I'll probably talk about it on my next segment, but it's been a long, long wait, but The Voice is coming back. Steve Perry has announced, I think October 5th is the release date for his album. He's gearing up with videos and merchandise and the whole nine yards. The video's made a premiere. So something people have waited for years and years and years, and it's finally coming to pass.
That is awesome. Yeah, Steve, you know, he could go on tour with Peter Cetera and also... You know, and also, of course, Dennis DeYoung, and they could have the 80s, front singers band.
Yeah, no, they can't. It would have to be in outdoor stadiums because there's no way those egos could fit in a room together.
Good point. Very, very good point. And I can guarantee if Steve is touring, I'm sure Kevin from the Flopcast will be there.
Absolutely.
All right. My shout out real quick is going to be going to Netflix. They just announced as of today that the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling are coming back for season 3.
Woohoo!
So fans of the show, rejoice. We will be getting more, and they're going to be in Vegas this time. Actually, probably getting more and more closer to where they were for the original Glow, which we were talking about.
Is that
about
out on VHS yet?
It is.
The original series, yes.
It is. I'm still trying to find Infinity Wars on VHS, so I think it's going to take a while to find that. So that is pretty awesome. I want to thank everyone for listening, and as always, it's been great. And, you know, Dragon Con is right around the corner, as we mentioned during the con report. And, you know, we have a lot going on before then. And then at the con. So we will see you then. But we will be back again next week. That's right, folks. We are going to be back, and we are looking at the TV show UFO from the 1960s. Yep, that's going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, we'll all be wearing our purple-haired wigs. I think we'll be totally ready for it. So until then, my name is Mike Faber, and we will see you here next time on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace, and we're done. You've been listening to the Air Station One podcast, a show by fans for fans. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe to our show up on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are found. While you're up there, please rate us and remember to leave feedback. It would greatly be appreciated. And remember to tell your friends all about us while you're at it. Earth Station One is available on most social media sites where you can join some really great topics or chats. Help support our show by shopping through our Amazon.com link or purchasing very cool ESO Network clothing and merchandise at our TeePublic store. Links to both are found on the top of our ESO Network webpage. Become a patron of the ESO Network by backing us up on Patreon for as little as 25 cents a week. Go to patreon.com/ESO Network to sign up. We want to hear from you. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time here on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace, and we're done.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.